listen to Spring of Truth. This program features English translations of selected powerful statements and speeches from the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. What's next up? We are featuring a collection of our finest radio productions. These are specially curated segments designed to entertain, educate, and inform you, dear listeners. So keep us company. Up next is Economic Divide.
Economic Divide.
There are certain grouping of countries that share common interests with respect to each other's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Once their trading interests converge and each makes equal gains, their economies thrive. No unipolarity, just multilateralism at its best, as outlined in the WTO. That is what the SCO is all about. The SCO Summit was a very successful gathering of a grouping of countries that share common interests, many aligning themselves due to the aggressive and harsh trade and tariff policies of the U.S. With China leading the way, many countries are lining up to join this organization, one in which Iran is also a member of. Coming up in today's program, the SCO Summit 2025, New World Emerges. China presented the Global Governance Initiative. This was an extension and upgrade of previous SCO charter initiatives. But the presence of world powers like India, China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea gave it a new world order makeover. SCO expansion, new members. The scope of the SCO has now expanded to include potential new members with foreign leaders and the heads of 10 international organizations. Also coming up, China, Russia, Iran, and India's alliance. The alliance of these countries is significant since many have been targeted by the U.S. India, for example, has been one of the targets slapped with 50% tariffs by the U.S. Our guests for this edition of the program include Dr. Mi Zhu, professor at the Gwangju Institute of the Greater Bay Area, and also Dr. Renato Penelope, professor of international trade at the University of Worcester.
Thanks for having me for this show. The SCO is a kind of important platform for all the related stakeholders to discuss about how can we deal with the different situation. I think the United States is also having its own ideas about what is the proper way and what is the fair way. But they are just trying to put it at the top of this governance, and that is not so friendly to all the members. So I think that SCO is providing all the members are a fair and open platform for them to discuss what we can do to improve our mutual benefits based on the respect. This governance, our platforms are providing so many new opportunities. I think these opportunities are really attracting the members who want to follow the rules of the market. So I would say that the platform may be not so perfect at the beginning, but it has already started our new space for all the related stakeholders to discuss about what they really want from each other and what they can provide for each other. SCO is a very huge part of the world. They have a lot of population and resources, and also are quite diversified potentials of the market. So I think these platforms are really creating our collaboratively ways of dealing with poverty reduction and also respect the innovation. And these platforms are also trying to teach the other parts, the rest of the world, that how the South-South cooperation can really benefit all the related stakeholders. And this platform is never just the aesthetic one. They are improving, and they are trying to welcome any suggestions from the different parts. If other countries or members who want to join this, I think that is welcome. And we will like to try to follow the way, the main ideas of the Shanghai spirit, and also trying to do better in creating more room for more resilient collaboration in the such a, our, you know, when we're facing such a big challenges coming from the protectionism and the unilateralism.
The SCO Tianjin Summit 2025 was the 25th Heads of State Council meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which was held from August 31st to September 1st of 2025 in Tianjin, China. It was the largest summit in SCO's history and was the fifth time that China hosted the meeting. The SCO aims to promote regional peace, stability, and prosperity through cooperation between its member states. Some international observers have noted, however, that the organization also serves as a forum for Russia and China to consolidate regional influence and to counterbalance Western institutions.
SCO has many similarities, like the BRICS. All the members are developing economies and they are coming from the global south. But there are also some special areas, like the SCO. They started from the security cooperation, trying to stop some of the isolationism and also something to do with the security concerns. So they are coming from a very emergent demand for collaboration and trying to stop the cross-border crimes. For the BRICS, I think that the main ideas are coming from the economic cooperation. So the five important members are trying to do more things, like to use their market advantages to cooperate with each other. For SCO, all the members are having different sizes, and I think that the collaboration in the SCO is much more diversified. So they are not only limited on the market integration, but also trying to improve the infrastructure connectivities. And also, as you mentioned, the financial innovation that is has been improved, be very successful and efficient in the Belt and Road Initiative practices. SCO is quite an interesting, important groups of the countries, and they are trying to identify what they really want to have. As we can find from the Tianjin Summit, that all the members agreed that we can carry on more collaboration in the different dimensions, like from the economic to the cultures, and also something to do with the medical cares. I mean, this kind of a very varied areas of collaboration can further improve the mutual understanding of each other. And this one is really helping for us to reduce the gaps between these countries, instead of just making it wider. So this is a really important thing for us to, if we want to be better fitted for the globalization and the digitalization, because all these kind of new governance issues are related to much stronger capacities that we can use the resources as more efficient than before. That is quite critical.
The social media post for this week. First, Western mainstream media keeps telling us that Russia is some isolated pariah, completely cut off from the world. But then I see this video from the SCO 2025 summit in Tianjin, China, where leaders were practically lining up to shake Putin's hand. Next, China proposed the creation of a new global governance at the SCO summit that is not based on bullying. The initiative is supported by Iran and Russia. Next, Iran's president at the SCO summit, without finding a right solution to the Palestinian issue, no plan for peace and justice in the world will succeed. What is happening today in Gaza is undoubtedly a stain of shame on human history and a test for all humans and governments witnessing these brutal crimes. Then the leaders of the multipolar world mash together as they look forward to building a strong new world order during the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, or the SCO summit.
Hi, thank you very much for having me here. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit was successful in the sense of showing the world a new center, a new organization where the different nations can cooperate together and build a future. We are living a time of multipolarity, so the world needs different poles, like different centers. Centers as BRICS has been serving as. But now we find like another center being developed here in the Asia, where Central Asia, East Asia, and other parts of Asia are coming together to build a future for themselves, finding market, finding a way to cooperate and build future for their economies. So I think like that can change the approach of the United States when they see traditional partners as India moving away and finding centers, finding communities where they can take part and develop a new market, a new sort of income or like exchange. We are seeing the bear, the elephant, and the dragon building a new world. A new world order is rising in this sense. A new world order where the economy find a different path.
With wars raging, rising economic uncertainty, and the fading dominance of the West, China appears to be positioning itself as the new architect of the global order, along with its partners like Iran, India, and Russia.
SCO finds a different way to cooperate once we are dealing specifically with Asia, with neighbor countries. Countries that find borders as a connection, so they can take straight measures to cooperate among themselves, especially when it comes to energy. Energy is a source of development. Without energy, you cannot give like leaps for development as in different types of industry, especially in the industry of the fourth type of industrial revolution that we are living, as AI can propose, or the new high quality economical development demands like a high intense use of energy. So this country is finding cooperation in the sense they can exchange and share the source of economy, share the source of energy in a way that they can boost their economy. China is finding here a perspective very similar to what Belt and Road Initiative has been invested, like BRICS has been invested, like energy, renewable energy. Those are sorts of energies that we want to see flowing and growing because they open different types of market. They have a different nature and environmental like industry that they promote and they develop. So I see SCO growing in a new sense, in a very contemporary and modern way, a way that the world is searching for. And AI will be playing an important role for sure.
This is the InfoNews section of the program. First, Google's contract with the Israeli regime. Google's $45 million contract with Netanyahu's office to spread Israeli propaganda. Now, the contract describes Google as a key entity supporting the prime minister's messaging. Israel's advertising bureau has since embarked on a mass advertising effort to conceal the hunger crisis that's happening in the Gaza Strip. Next, why Russia does not need Nord Stream. Before the war, Russia exported 200 BCM per year of gas to Europe. The new Power of Siberia 2 pipeline will ship 50 BCM per year of gas to China. Based on our special investigation, in 2023, Moscow and Tehran signed a deal for 110 BCM per year of Russian gas transfers through Iran. That is equal to the combined Nord Stream capacity. Iran will function as a regional hub, moving Russian gas to neighbors and global markets. Next, Canada's economy not doing well. The Canadian unemployment has jumped to 7.1% as tariffs weigh on the economy. Persistent uncertainty around U.S. trade policy has kept Canadian businesses on tenterhooks, discouraging hiring. Then, the U.S. economy. Second week, jobs report undercuts Trump's claim of a booming economy. After a bad employment rate in August, President Trump fired the official in charge of the numbers. This month's data was just as disappointing. The labor market is stalling, and the U.S. is facing real strains under the weight of his economic agenda. This is the in-depth section of the program. At a time when much of the world is grappling with the chaos unleashed by Trump's tariffs and threats, the SCO has served as a platform for countries like China, Russia, India, and Iran to project the stabilizing force. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, better known as SCO, is an intergovernmental organization founded in the year 2001. It is the largest regional organization in the world, mainly because of two factors: geographical area covered and the population. Its member countries occupy almost 60% of Europe and Asia and cover 40% of the world's population. The SCO aims to promote regional cooperation on issues like security, economy, trade, and cultural exchanges among its member states. As of July 2023, there are 9 full members of the SCO: China, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Russia, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, India, Pakistan, and Iran.
It is true that every country or even the individuals who they want to have a sustainable development, they have to pay what they have borrowed from others. Especially for our country, I think it's so important for us to make it more resilient and the value of our credit stable. Well, for the United States, they are having too much public debt from not only from its domestic holders, but from all around the world. The debt issue is a kind of a very important, things for the investors to evaluate the potentials of investing in the United States. So I would say that the U.S. debt, the treasuries are still very important kind of treasuries that investors who are trying to make a basket of portfolios in investing in the United States. But these things cannot only trying to be sent to the follower, taker of these investors. So the keep the debt stable and repayable is one of the critical requirements for the whole process. So I think that the U.S., they are trying to borrow as much money as they can borrow from the international market without enough care about the results, because many of the treasuries are to be paid in a little bit longer term coming from nowadays. So this has made many investors worry about its potential risk. So when they are going to, meet their demand from the vertical size to virtual size to the real economy, they are going to think about these issues. And China is one of the important lenders of this money to the U.S. I don't think that we want to have a lose-lose situation. For both of us, we are still trying to keep it stable and trying to make the, you know, all the investment in the proper values in the foreseeable future. So I think that is not cannot be done by just one country. We have to have the promises and also some of this real action from the US side to keep these things recycled and become profitable for both of us and the rest of the world.
Trade between China and the other member states of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization totaled $890 billion for the year 2024. The combined economic output has surpassed $30 trillion. At the Tianjin SCO Summit, Xi Jinping unveiled the Global Governance Initiative, a bold plan to reshape how the world is run. It consists of five core concepts: sovereign equality, international rule of law, multilateralism, people-centered approach, and real results. Although not explicitly stated in the SCO Charter, the SCO's implied goal is to counterbalance U.S. and the EU influence, especially in world politics. This was on display from the warm affection between India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi, and the Russian president. The U.S. had slapped deep tariffs on India, warning and threatening India not to buy Russian oil.
The fact that China has sold like most of its dollar reserves during like February 2023 to now, it's a matter of the request that most of the southern, like the south-south countries are being requesting. We need a reform in the financial system, and the world needs to change its financial ways. We understand that, we know the dollar has been used in a way as a tool of war, a weapon, and a way to weaken it is to step away, is to get rid of it. So every time a nation sees it threatened or want to exchange and give a step away from the risk of being suffering from this, the use of this weapon, they try to get rid of this. So China is maturing its economy. Its economy is growing in the sense that it doesn't depend much on dollar anymore. More than 150 countries in the world are dealing and making business straight to China. So China is finding new ways to make exchange with those countries without using dollar, bypassing dollar. And it's natural that the dollar will start to slowly losing its role and the center of the geopolitical order. So it's a natural position. It's probably something that we're going to see more and more often among nations that want to increase their like exchange in the economy with the world, but doesn't want to take the risk of any sanctions or any retaliation from the United States.
Thank you.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters in faith who are listening to RIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad. I'm the host of this show. In this episode, we're going to talk about one of the sayings of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, that is very influential, and we can learn many lessons from that. Imam Khomeini was an all-around scholar. He was a jurist. He was a political figure. He was a mystical and ethical figure as well. And he knew a lot about Islam. One of the things that he said that we're going to talk about today and discuss, he said that we are all from Allah. The whole world belongs to Allah. It is the manifestation of Allah. And the whole universe will return to him, to Allah. This is something that is backed up by the verses of the Quran and also narrations of the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salam. Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. If we keep this in mind, if we always remember that this world will end, and we're not here to live forever in this world, our attitude toward life is going to change. We will feel that this world is not a place that we're going to live here forever. That is why we're going to be a lot more motivated to do the things that Allah wants from us. If we know that we're going to return to Allah, we will do our best to make sure that Allah is pleased with us. That when we return to Allah, we are not full of sins and so many impurities and all those bad things that can happen to us in this world. We have to make sure that when we want to meet Allah in the other world, we are completely, our souls and hearts are completely clean, and we have repented of all of our sins. We have asked Allah for forgiveness. And when we return to Allah, we return to Him while we are happy, while we are, we look forward to meeting Allah. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Spring of Truth. Inshallah, in the next episodes, we will talk more about some famous quotes and sayings by Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Was Spring of Truth, a selection of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Wonders of nature never cease to amaze us. In the northwest of Isfahan, near the city of Alavije, hidden beneath a lone mountain, lies a mysterious cave called Sangris or Rockville. You can't see the entrance of the cave from afar as you climb, since it's like the entrance of a well, going deep down into the heart of the Alavije mountain. It might look difficult and somewhat scary at first, but it gets easier as you go further inside and get used to the new atmosphere. After all, caves are simply large underground rooms that are beautifully decorated by nature's hand. It's very eerie in here, and since there's no real lighting, it feels like a real adventure, like you're discovering the cave for the very first time. Limestone is one of the softest materials in the world, and as soon as it comes into contact with water, it dissolves. As droplets seep into caverns, they emit carbon dioxide, and when that evaporates, it leaves a bit of calcite on the ceiling. Calcite is essentially crystal in the form of limestone. As the process continues, more calcite is left behind, creating breathtaking formations known as stalactites and stalagmites. But this doesn't happen overnight. In fact, they grow at a very slow 16 cubic centimeters every 120 years, so such big columns can take millions of years to form.
Okay, our guides have told us that there are about 6 or 7 small caverns in this cave. We've checked out some of them. We're going to try and look at all of them, but I'm sure there's more, because on our way, we saw a couple of holes in the walls and in the ceiling, and you can't enter them without being fully equipped. So I don't think anyone's tried anyway. We can't go there, but I'm sure there's more.
Visiting this cave makes you feel like you're one of the characters in Jules Verne's science fiction novel, Journey to the Center of the Earth. But the thing is that this cave isn't a part of some fairy tale world. It's real, and it can be found right here near the city of Alavije. This cave was nature-made, but from all the water-related wonders engineers gifted to the world, to us all, perhaps the greatest luxury is indeed fresh and clean running water. Persian aqueducts, or qanats in Farsi, had a simple structure and were graded so ingeniously that gravity did all the work, bringing water up from under our feet to counties and towns without the need for fossil fuel or electric pumps. We've come to the historic city of Adistan, that's 110 kilometers to the northeast of Isfahan, to show you two of the many aqueducts in Iran. The Aruneh aqueduct is said to be 2,500 years old. Such aqueducts move tens of thousands of liters of water, filtering them naturally along the way until they reached their point of division. Aqueducts are tunnels dug deep in the foothills of mountains with many shafts along their path. With a steady slope along the way, they directed water into populated areas. The challenge for engineers was to keep the water flowing at the same speed throughout its journey. They were mostly engineered in the same way, but you can still find exceptions if you look hard enough. The Moon Aqueduct has two horizontal canals. They are 4 kilometers apart and parallel to one another. The mother well of this aqueduct is 31 meters deep, and in total it has 30 shafts. In the those days, although water was abundant, with the use of these ingenious underground structures in dry regions, people still made sure that none of it was put to waste.
This ancient water clock is known among the locals as Peng. It was used on a daily basis to ensure the fair division of irrigation water to the different fields of the village. Usually, one of the trusted elders of the village was in charge of the water clock, and he's known as the Mirab in the local dialect.
The locals had divided the 24 hours into pengs. The copper peng that has a small hole at its bottom was placed in a bigger bowl filled with water. The peng would gradually fill with water and would finally sink, hitting the big bowl and making a sound. At this point, the Mirab would empty it and repeat the process. After doing this for a number of times, the water path to one field was closed and another was opened. This process was repeated throughout the 24 hours by the Mirab to water the fields. The building in which the Mirab did his work was known as Pengkhane, the Peng House. Only three of the many Peng Houses of Najafabad have managed to survive the course of time and have now been restored. This is Golnar Farnoodi for Iran.
humid August morning in Washington, a blurry photograph began circulating online. It appeared to show Europe's top leaders, Emmanuel Macron, Ursula von der Leyen, Friedrich Merz, among others, slouched in the White House hallway, heads bowed, waiting for their turn with Donald Trump. AI hoax or a real snapshot of Europe's posture in the 21st century? In truth, it almost doesn't matter, because the image told a larger truth. Europe's role in the so-called Western alliance has shrunk to something more like obedient accompaniment, a junior partner awaiting instructions. And nowhere is that clearer in the case of Iran's nuclear program. Since World War II, the transatlantic partnership has been dressed up as a strategic alliance. In reality, it's been a structure of dependence. America rebuilt Western Europe through the Marshall Plan, but in exchange, it locked the continent into its economic orbit. Washington pressured Europeans to shift from coal to American-supplied oil. It pushed its corporations into Europe's reconstruction, and through NATO, established in 1949, it cemented its military primacy, with Europe's defense forever under U.S. command.
Everybody was celebrating but us. And we're the ones that won the war. We won the war. And they helped. But without us, they don't win the war. We're all speaking German. You know that, right? Without us, they're speaking German. Maybe a little Japanese, too.
For decades, this arrangement worked as long as Europe's prosperity grew. But the price hasn't always been clear when it comes to the big questions, war and peace, sanctions and diplomacy, allies and adversaries. Europe defers to Washington. We saw it in Iraq in 2003 when Britain went along despite massive domestic opposition, while France and Germany's dissent quickly softened. We saw it again after 2022 in Ukraine, where sanctions on Russia devastated Europe's own energy markets and industry far more than America's. And now, in 2025, we see it once more in the European Troika's decision to activate the so-called snapback mechanism under the Iran nuclear deal. On August 29th, Paris, Berlin, and London announced that they would move to reimpose all United Nations sanctions on Iran, sanctions that had been lifted under the 2015 JCPOA, a deal painstakingly negotiated over Tehran's nuclear program. The timing is not accidental. Just 2 months earlier, in June, the United States and Israel carried out coordinated strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities. Costly, dangerous, illegal, and inconclusive, Iran's program, though damaged, survived. And so, in a perfect division of labor, the Europeans stepped in with the legal and diplomatic hammer.
Good morning. Yesterday, in accordance with UN Security Council Resolution 2231, the foreign ministers of France, Germany, and my own country, the United Kingdom, notified the Security Council that we believe Iran to be in significant non-performance of its commitments under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
The message to Tehran was blunt. Negotiate directly with Washington or face the return of the toughest international sanctions. Yes, the Europeans dangle an extension of the deadline. But let's be clear that if Iran agrees to direct talks with the United States is no concession. It's a demand for surrender, and perhaps more striking than the ultimatum itself is what it reveals about Europe's self-image, or the lack of one.
The European countries must act honestly and responsibly, considering the history of negotiations, considering what they have themselves agreed as part of their commitments under Resolution 2231. To review their positions and strive to adopt an independent approach, free from influence from two other destructive actors, the Zionist regime and the United States of America.
Europe never lived up to its JCPOA commitments after Washington walked away in 2018. INSTEX, the mechanism designed to shield trade with Iran from U.S. sanctions, never worked. European companies fled Iran overnight, terrified of American penalties. So the notion that Europe now holds leverage, that it can dictate terms, is more theater than reality. But this theater has a director, and he sits in Washington. Marco Rubio, Trump's Secretary of State, admitted it outright. In an August 28th statement, he confirmed that Europe's snapback move was taken under direct guidance from the White House, citing National Security Memorandum No. 2, signed by Trump in February. In other words, the foreign ministers of France, Germany, and Britain were not making independent policy. They were executing Washington's orders. This is not diplomacy, it is subordination. And the Iran case is hardly unique. Think back. When the NSA was caught wiretapping Angela Merkel's phone in 2013, Europe grumbled, then swallowed the insult. When negotiations over a transatlantic trade pact tilted heavily toward U.S. corporations, Europe signed anyway. And when secondary American sanctions forced European banks and firms out of Iran in the past decade, Brussels could do little more than issue statements of regret. Today, Europe finds itself once again reduced to enforcer of Washington's agenda, even as the costs mount at home. Its energy prices soared because of U.S.-driven sanctions on Russia. Its industries now face investment flight to the United States, where cheaper gas and subsidies lure away factories and jobs. Strategic autonomy, the buzzword in Brussels for years, looks more like strategic illusion. The irony is that while Europe diminishes itself, the rest of the world is moving on. New alignments are taking shape across Eurasia. Russia, China, Iran, and others building networks of trade, energy, and security that bypass the West entirely. In this multipolar order, credibility is currency. And on Iran, Europe has squandered it. For Tehran, the EU is no longer a trustworthy partner. Deal signed with Europeans turned to dust the moment Washington disapproves. The commercial space, once available to Airbus, Siemens, or Total, is now occupied by Chinese and Russian competitors. And diplomatically, Europe is seen not as a mediator, but as an extension of U.S. power, irrelevant as an independent player. Donald Trump, never one to mince words, put it plainly this February from the White House. Let's be honest, the European Union was formed to screw the United States. His vice president, J.D. Vance, speaking in Munich days earlier, was even blunter. America can do nothing for you, and there is nothing you can do for the American people. Harsh rhetoric? Yes. But look at Europe's behavior, and it almost validates the contempt. When leaders bow, literally or figuratively, in the White House corridor, what message does that send about sovereignty, about relevance? Europe's snapback decision against Iran is not about Iran alone. It's a symptom of something larger. A continent that no longer believes in its own capacity to shape the world, that no longer takes risks on its own principles, that no longer acts except through the shadow of American approval. The photograph, real or fake, of European leaders waiting for Trump may have been a hoax, but it captured something true. The waiting room has become Europe's place in global politics. Unless Europe rediscovers autonomy, invests in its own security, and reclaims diplomatic initiative, it risks becoming not a pole in a multipolar world, but a relic remembered only as Washington's loyal lieutenant. And for Iran, for Russia, for China, for the global South, the conclusion is already drawn. Europe is not an independent actor. It is an instrument. That is the reality behind the snapback mechanism. That is the story of Europe in 2025. For all the talk of the Western Alliance, the truth is simpler and starker. There is no West. There is America, and there are its followers.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
Greetings once again, dear listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran, the vibrant capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Here's what's waiting for you next on your radio station. We'll bringing you the very latest updates. It's time for our news segment this hour. Stay informed with the top headlines and breaking stories from around the world. After this, prepare for profound insights with Minbar. In this program, we present selected excerpts from the speeches of the renowned Islamic scholars, covering a wide range of topics including ethics, theology, Quranic interpretation, Islamic history, and at times, social and political issues. Minbar brings the voices of the pulpit to life, timeless words that inspire thought, faith, and action. Following this program, we have another segment of radio productions for this hour. We sincerely hope you enjoy it. Finally, we present leaders' speech. Listen to English translations of the selected segments and speeches by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on various occasions. A concluding moment of guidance and reflection. Up next is news this hour. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top headlines. The Iranian president calls for boosting unity among Muslim states in the face of Israeli aggression as he leaves for the Qatari capital Doha to attend a summit of the Islamic leaders. Dozens more are killed in the Gaza Strip as the Israeli military pushes ahead with its genocidal campaign against civilians in the besieged Palestinian territory. And finally, this hour, the Yemeni army conducts another anti-Israel operation, hitting the regime's Ramon airport and a military target with several drones. Hello and welcome, everyone. Let's go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. Iran's president has called on Muslim countries to come together in a unified whole to stand up to the Israeli acts of aggression.